I want you to look at your pew leaflet cover this morning and see that fine assemblage of gentlemen in the picture on the front of the cover. What I really want you to look at is the verse underneath, and I want that to kind of just dig inside you. Unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. And Bruce ended, as he was supposed to, with the words, "This is the gospel of Christ." Doesn't sound much like gospel to me. Does that sound like good news to you? Unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. You hear that? Unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Got it? Take it home, put it on your fridge, look at it every day, and feel terrible. And you need to be careful with this. We need to think a tiny bit about the scribes and the Pharisees. They get a pretty bad rap in much of Christian preaching and storytelling and spirituality. They are often pictured as these punctual, uptight, fastidious, narrow-minded, bigoted, power-hungry church officials. And, you know, there are a few church officials like that. There are a few places where you might find that kind of leadership in your church and in our traditions. It's just a sad reality. But for the most part, these people were not evil. They were not destructive. They were people who cared deeply and passionately about their religious tradition. They were people who cared deeply and passionately about their faith and spirituality. They were people who cared deeply and passionately about their community. And they wanted the people in their community to live good lives. They wanted them to prosper. They wanted them to find their way to life and light and goodness and truth and beauty. So don't just write them off, okay? They were good people. They were, in fact, very righteous. They were meticulous in their keeping of the law. The scribes and the Pharisees are the people you want as your next-door neighbor, because they'll come and fix your fence when it's broken. They're the people you want in your church, because they'll be on every committee, and they'll give bucket loads of money to the well-being of the church, and they'll be always showing up, and they'll never miss a Sunday or a Sabbath. These are the guys you want around. They're not, for the most part, bad people. So for our righteousness, our right behavior, our right attitudes, our goodness to exceed them is a pretty tall order. And it's supposed to be. But it won't surprise you, perhaps, those of you who have listened to more than about 5 minutes of me speaking, which is most of you from time to time, it won't surprise you to discover that I don't actually think this verse is about working hard to become better people or more good people or to measure up to some exaggerated standard of righteousness that we are striving to achieve. That is not, I do not believe, what this verse is about. If we're going to understand this verse correctly, I think we need to back up a little bit in the reading and start where we were instructed to begin our reading from Matthew chapter 5 this morning. We began with Jesus saying, "You are the salt of the earth." And then following that up in the next verse with, "You are the light of the world." Now, most approaches to those two statements, try to look at salt and ask, okay, what's salt? What's salt good for? What does salt do? Okay, so that's what we should be like. Or they look at the qualities of light and they say, well, what's light like? What does light do? So that's what we should be like and that's what we should do. But actually, Jesus never says anything about the quality of salt or the nature of light. He goes on to point out exactly what he's talking about in these two images. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hidden. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under the bushel basket. So the problem that Jesus is identifying here is that salt and light in these cases have lost their understanding of who they are. Salt is no longer being salty. Light is no longer being light. They've lost their sense of identity. They've lost their sense of what it means to be salt and what it means to be light. And that is the problem with the scribes and the Pharisees. They've lost their sense of their true identity. They've come to believe that our nature, our identity, is fulfilled by the things that we do, by being righteous, by getting our behavior correct. And that if only we can get all of our moral and ethical ducks in a row, then we'll be okay and we'll be who we were intended to be. That is not your identity. The point of this verse, in fact, it's summed up if you read on just a few verses past where our gospel reading stopped this morning. If you read on a few verses later into Matthew chapter 5, verse 48, you'll hear Jesus summing up the whole thing, saying simply, be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. Okay? You go first, and I'll watch. You're going to be perfect. In fact, just a little bit earlier than Jesus saying, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, he has reminded us, I tell you, until heaven and earth pass away, not one letter, not one stroke of a letter will pass from the law until it is accomplished. Therefore, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments, just the teeniest one. Has anybody this morning yet not broken just a teeny bit of the law? Has anybody had just a tiny covetous thought? Or has anybody been just a little bit irritated this morning? No, none of you, I know, but maybe some of us have. And if we have, we have broken the law. Our righteousness has fallen short. We have not been perfect, if perfect means keeping all the law all the time without failure. So what this whole thing is intended to do is it's intended to push us to the mat. It's intended to take our arm and put it up behind us and twist it and twist it until finally we cry out, help! Uncle, I give! I give up! I can't do it! That's the place that Jesus wants us to become. Our identity is not people who are perfect, not people who are law keepers, not people who are righteous. Our identity is people who are failures. That's what we do best. We fail best. We let each other down. We let God down. We let the world community down. We let creation down. We let ourselves down. We fail 10 times before breakfast. If we can't see the failures in our lives, then our problem is that our vision of our nature is too small. It's diminished. We are created to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. We are created to be these luminous beings of self-giving love. We are created to be sacrificial. We are created to turn the other cheek when somebody hits us on one cheek. We are created to give away our coat when someone asks for our shirt. We are created to give and give and give without consideration for our own concerns or well-being. And you know what? We don't do it very well. And you know what else? That's okay. We are not condemned because of our failures. We are embraced and loved because of our failures. You know, it's like I was watching, what's his name? Your grandson. What?
Lachlan.
Right, Lachlan. I was watching Lachlan up here this morning, and he's learning to walk.
Oh, he knows.
He knows. He just hasn't got it just
done.
But seriously, so you watch this little person and he pulls himself up on his mom or his dad and he takes a faltering step and then he falls down and his mom and his dad come over and they smack him and they say, "You stupid kid, you fell down. What's the matter with you? You're never going to learn to walk that way." Right? Isn't that how it works? Come on, you can do better. Look, watch me. I'll show you how to walk. This is how you do it. Get up. But you know what? That's the vision a lot of people have of God. God smacks us when we're down. God smacks us when we're not as good as the scribes and the Pharisees. God smacks us when we're not perfect, because we all know that being smacked makes us better people, right? We all know that being smacked makes us screw up our determination and try harder to do better. And trying harder to do better is the meaning of life, right? Wrong. No, it's not. We're not put here to try harder and do better. We are put here to fall into the arms of grace and mercy. You know, I don't know. I mean, this is why in our first reading, Paul, and I think we need to take him seriously here, that he really means it. He says, "I came to you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling. My speech and my proclamation were not with plausible words of wisdom, but with a demonstration of the Spirit. I came to you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling. My speech and my proclamation were not with plausible words of wisdom." So, Ruth, when are you preaching? 2 weeks? Yeah, so that make you feel better? Not plausible, great, flowery words? No? I've been coaxing Ruth. Come on, Ruth. You're going to get up there and you're going to preach. And it's going to be fantastic. You're going to slay everybody. It's going to be a perfect sermon. We're all going to go, "Oh, wow, did you hear what Ruth said?" No. Doesn't matter. Paul, great writer of the epistles, "I came to you in weakness and in fear." Can you do that? Yeah, you can come in weakness and fear. That's good. Can you come in much trembling? Yeah, she can come in much trembling. She's feeling better. Can you come not with plausible words of wisdom? Yeah, can do that. She's made the grade. We can do that. We can come in fear and trembling. We can come acknowledging our failures and our weaknesses. We can come knowing that we don't measure up, that we haven't been. You know, I don't know when, somebody should tell me, because I don't understand, when arrogance became a Christian virtue. Could somebody explain that to me? How did that happen? How did we get from this to the place where being an arrogant person became the top Christian virtue that we all wanted to strive for? Arrogance has no place in the Christian life. It is not a quality or a characteristic that Jesus seeks in any of us. We all need to start with step one. And you all know what step one is? Step one is we admitted that we were powerless over fill in the blank. That our lives had become unmanageable. I can do that. I can reach that standard. I can acknowledge that my life is often unmanageable. I can acknowledge that I let down the people I love the most in life. I let down the people I work among. I let down God's creation. I let down the human community. I fail and I fail and I fail. I am powerless over all those forces of my ego that lead me into crazy places. But I need to move on to step two. Because step two says, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Don't you love that? A power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And that's why we hold up the standard. The standard is perfection. The standard is beauty and truth and goodness and light. And the recognition is my constant failure. And between those two things pours the light and the power and the wisdom and the love and the presence of God. Now, I don't know how. Did you pick the music this morning? Wait, how do you get inside my head?
You get inside.
He's got inside my head. So we sang the theme song for this sermon this morning. And I'm wondering if we can sing it again. Lord, I need you. Every hour. You know the one? You got it there, Kathy? Lee, thank you. We're going to sing this and kind of feel the truth of this, that we cannot do this journey on our own. We cannot do this journey without a power and a goodness and a wisdom and a light and a strength that absolutely supersedes anything the scribes and the Pharisees even began to imagine. So let's sing together this beautiful song. I give you permission to put aside all your arrogance, all your self-confidence, and just come in our brokenness and in our failures.